items are tabled, but they will only be approved at the next meeting, so that we have enough time to consider the different reports that are going to be presented to us. The other thing that is important about the oversight report in particular is that I would like members to go back read it, and if there are aspects of the report that maybe are disputed, or if members want to add, they may do so and forward those amendments to Mangcole, witness to me, so that when we get, when we come back here, we can have time to deliberate on it. I think it's a very important report. I would really love to see this committee linking its day-to-day activities with our own oversight outcomes. And it's going to be very important that we apply our minds when we deal with that report. And this is why I think we need to take it, so that when we come back, we will have very fruitful engagement. That said, members, let me welcome you to this meeting, and hoping that we are going to be able to get through all this. We are in the DRR process now, and it's going to be very important that if there are anything that we need to be, we would like to contribute towards influencing the budget process, is going to be absolutely critical that we listen to what our officials are going to present and input on that, and to have the presentations before you. That said, members, I have apologies. Minister Mutambi, I had a very good meeting with her yesterday. And she has forwarded her apology for today. They have these labor deliberations, I don't know. But she's caught up in that one. She really wanted to be here. But we have the Deputy Minister here, and I think it's fitting for this committee to congratulate both the Minister in her in absentia and the Deputy Minister. And I would like you to give them a round of applause. We are looking forward to working with them. And I know that they have made certain undertakings during our meeting with them. And I think we are going to have a very fruitful term. Because we all agree that we need to cooperate in order to improve the public service and administration in this country. Members, that said, I would like to call upon Prof. Arla Seven. Or before maybe that, maybe Deputy Minister, on a point of privilege, do you want to, this is your first portfolio committee meeting, maybe I should give you an opportunity to say a few words before I can afford properly an opportunity to speak. Over to you, Madam.
Thank you very much, and honorable members. Yes, this is a great pleasure for me to be part of this family and want to be forward to a very robust, fruitful, and constructive engagement with members of the committee. Because my belief and the philosophy behind this engagement is that we are here to serve. So the relationship is based on that principle. We hope our relationship will enable us to make our contribution to the country and to fulfill our mandate as we were put here by the voters of this country. And all of us put our efforts to make sure that public service becomes what it must do to make sure that proper service delivery to the people of the country. And I have no doubt that the relationship between the department and the honorable members of the committee will enable to create an enabling environment to that effect. Without wasting much time, I want to thank you and also to confirm that indeed I'm very happy to be part of this family and we are here for a long journey. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Prof. Levin, are you ready? Thank you, Chairperson. Over to you.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, Honorable Members. Good morning, Deputy Minister. Good morning, Chairperson of the Public Service Commission.
Thank you, thank you.
Good morning, Madi. Thank you very much for this opportunity.
Sorry, let me just interrupt a bit. I didn't receive this apology. The whip is advising me that over and above Minister Mthambi's apology, we also have the apology from Dlamini Zubazana and from Don Bela Mdala. Thank you. You may proceed.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. In this presentation on our annual performance plan for 2017-18, we are going to provide an overview, table of plans for the key programs, this is our financial allocation, our current resource position, the indicators of it, from corporate governance matters, and then on to. Firstly, we need to obviously locate what we do as a national school of government in the context of the National Development Plan and the need to contribute to building a capable developmental state. And we also are involved primarily in the aspect of building human capability, which across the public service and society will not achieve the objective. Our mandate focuses specifically on training public servants towards the professionalization of the public service, again, emphasizing the national government plan. We work across the public service as well as local governments, and we also work with other organizations states as well as internationally, we have a number of international partnerships and collaborations, including the African Management Development Institute Network on the African continent, of which we are the treasurer. We also present in this plan against the background of a greatly strengthened organizational performance from the last financial year. We will still come and get the opportunity, I'm sure, to present our annual report, which will show that we did achieve our training targets and we also generated substantial revenue which enabled us to create a good platform for the current financial year. The context of this presentation is also meant to check as an indicator of the welcoming of our new executive authority from the Minister of Minister. And we have had engagements with them prior to delivering this annual report, and their input and feedback has been extremely useful. On the side of the strategic overview, we do also contribute as the National School of Government to Outcome 12, an efficient, effective, and development-oriented public service, which is one of the 14 outcomes of the new strategic framework of government. And there are three specific projects, developing and rolling out the executive coaching program, developing and implementing identified service development programs, and training and unemployed graduates. And all those key output areas we do already We will be continuing to place great emphasis on the rollout of the compulsory induction program across all the salary levels in public service. At the end of the financial year, we began the process of inducting Deputy General and Deputy Directors General, and we also have provided an executive coaching program for those who pass through that level of induction. We also are implementing the Rusanam Africa campaign, which is utilizing retired and former public servants, as well as serving public servants to strengthen the internal and onboard capacity of the public servants to train public servants. We also deepen our use of online learning to expand the reach of the public service and to encourage self-based learning. The learning and culture are open far wider by our efforts on online learning. We also would intensify our international network, as well as create thought leadership between the public and private sectors. In terms of the key priority areas, focusing on training for government communicators, as well as a suite of courses on economic development. Deepening the turnaround strategy for the NSG to ensure that we are able to sustain the level of performance that we achieved last year in delivering on our training targets, as well as strengthening the evaluation of the outcomes of our training, as well as beginning to look at how to evaluate the impact of the training that the NSG undertakes. The value proposition will be critical in the review, as will the midterm review of the funding model, in order to seek innovative ways of increasing the funding base of the NSG and modifying the existing cost recovery model. Moving on to the plan itself, we have two programs. The first is administration, which consists of the normal kind of corporate support areas in all program ones across across government. And program one has a sub-program focusing on the Office of the Principal, international special projects and communications, the Office of the Chief Financial Officer and internal audit, and the other sub-program focusing on corporate management, providing services related to strategic planning, performance management, human resource development and management, ICT, legal, risk management and compliance, logistics and facility management. During the financial year 2017-18, we will be focusing on a number of strategic objectives, including the improvement of financial sustainability, organizational performance, accountability and compliance, with targets including the payment of invoices of suppliers within 30 days, strengthening our average days for debt collection to 60 days, with an unqualified or clean audit. We have had unqualified audits for the last 5 years in the NSG, as well as obviously achieving our revenue targets or getting close to them.
implementing efficient and effective infrastructure and human resource management to support improved performance. That focuses on maintaining a vacancy rate of less than 10%, and reviewing, if necessary, the disaster recovery plan and monitoring and testing our ICT disaster recovery solution, and strategic multi and bilateral partnerships to enable the NSG to deliver its learning and development programs aimed at capacitating the public service. And we're looking at facilitating 3 agreements supporting international exchanges and capacity building initiatives, one of which is with the new Partnership of African Development, where we are entering into a partnership to support African countries in the open government partnership, as well as to set up a postgraduate program on African governance, also in partnership with the French École Nationale Administration. Program 2 is the central operational program, which is a program of training, management and delivery, policy and planning, and specialized services. And it does facilitate the transfer payments to the trading account for the training and development of public sector employees. We have a number of strategic objectives, including implementing effective research to inform training and development needs and opportunities in the public sector, where we've set targets including 5 research projects, 8 training needs analysis with public sector institutions, and 6 research colloquia workshops annually. And secondly, the implementation of effective monitoring of the quality of training and development interventions and the evaluation of the effectiveness of interventions. and then the development of accredited and non-accredited curriculum corresponding to public service training and development needs, where we're looking at developing or reviewing 6 programs, institutionalizing the executive coaching program, the quality assurance of 6 programs by the NSG Quality Assurance Committee, and maintaining the status of the NSG as an accredited training provided by the relevant accrediting bodies. Fourthly, the development and offering of technology-mediated learning, where we're looking at offering 22 e-learning interventions by the end of the financial year, and the provision of training and development opportunities for compulsory and demand-led training to current and potential public servants on the NSG curriculum and programs. And there the key targets are 45,370 new and current public servants on compulsory and demand-led programs through face-to-face and online learning, and then the orientation of 2,750 unemployed youth graduates and interns through the Breaking Barriers to Entry program. So this is a breakdown of the different training targets, with a total of 48,120, 6,000 in leadership, 9,000 in management, 4,000 in administration, and then 26,320 on the compulsory induction program, and then the unemployed graduates and interns, 2,750. That the training targets for last year were about 4,000 higher overall, and that was partly because of our efforts to cover up the backlog on the compulsory induction program. We are not only trying to shift the funding model, we also are trying to shift the delivery model in a number of ways. The one way is instead of solely being a facilitator, in other words managing outsourced training delivery, we are creating a mixed model now where we provide as well as facilitate, depending on the nature of the program. and then we have a number of modalities which we are using to deliver. The partnerships with 4 higher education institutions for the delivery of the emerging advanced management development program, working with the University of Free State, the Tshwane University of Technology, the University of Fort Hare, and the University of Western Cape. We also have the partnership with Northwest University for the delivery of the executive development program. And we also contract many individual independent contractors. And there will be changes to that base of providers through the Ruta Nangma Afrika, where increasingly we will use retired and serving public servants as well. Obviously those who are serving will not be remunerated, but we did get a cabinet determination that as part of their performance during any cycle, up to 8 days they could spend on training or facilitating training of public service employees. In that regard, we have prepared 1,221 department officials to deliver on the CIP. Those are trainers we have trained and accredited to work on the compulsory induction program, who are ready to be activated during the current period. We also have a project management unit, which we set up with approval of the minister, comprising 15 trainers dedicated to the delivery of the compulsory induction program, and 23 NSG officials who are also accredited trainers for the compulsory induction program and other induction programs, and also including the breaking barriers to entry program. Monitoring and evaluation, as we've indicated, we're hoping to take that one to another level this year if possible. The kinds of evaluation we currently do are on-site training, where we go and the evaluators are there on-site. Obviously, like any other training interventions, the participants do fill questionnaires at the end of the training, which we analyze and assess. But we also want to undertake design evaluations, which is to evaluate the development and design of the curriculum. Process evaluations, where we look at the actual implementation of the program, and that helps us to strengthen our delivery system. The application of learning studies are really the extent to which we find changes in the participants' knowledge and behavior within the context of their own work. And that is to see whether those who have participated in training are able to apply their learning in the workplace. And there's a number of programs, including Project Kaedu, which is a program for compulsory program for the SMS, where they spend time in service delivery sites as well as in the classroom, and obviously try and strengthen their applied and project management skills, supply chain management, executive development program, pillar recruitment and selection, excellent customer service for frontline delivery staff. And we are also undertaking foundation management development program and CIP SMS levels 13 and 14 as application of learning studies. Impact assessment is what we're hoping to move to and looking at possibly piloting something during the course of the financial year to develop the necessary tools and methodologies to help us to assess the impact of training initiatives across the public service. On the financial allocation, the voted fund allocation, the MTF allocation, this table looks at the changing allocation between 2013-14 up until 2019-20. And we obviously in 17-18, and we can see compared with the previous year, the line item there, public sector organizational and staff development, that, as we had indicated to the committee, was where we received a cut and we had to apply our reserves in order to make good that particular line item. In other words, we had to use our reserves to transfer to the training trading account. So in terms of the allocation, the public sector organizational and staff development component of the voted funds is what we transfer to the training trading account to assist that particular account. So the total allocation is 160 million, 0.5 million. And then the breakdown in terms of the economic classification, compensation of employees, goods and services, transfers and subsidies, and the payments for capital assets are provided, the numbers there, making up the 160.5 million. This one deals with the MTF trade account, and it's obviously a forecast budget based on our training targets and the cost recovery model. So it's basically looking at the different years, and looking at our anticipation is to generate 158.6 million through course fees during the current financial year. The transfers are given from the voted funds, as we indicated on the previous slide. And the total revenue projection, therefore, comes out of 225.8 million. So that's really the forecast budget for the trading account for the current year. And then obviously the comparative figures are there for previous years and the estimates for the years going forward in the next three cycles. On the human resource side, we have a total of 227 posts on the approved establishment for programs 1 and 2, with 207 posts full. And that is a vacancy rate of 7.5% by the end of March 2017. And there is an illustration here that we have strengthened on the recruitment and retention of staff, so that the vacancy rate has come down over the last few years, 2 years. These are the key employment equity figures in terms of the targets, 1.9%, 2% of people with disabilities. And then on the overall staff composition, we have 61% of our staff are female, and in the senior management echelon, we have 51% female. So we have met the targets, and we hope to strengthen, particularly around the recruitment of people with disabilities into the future. On the corporate governance side, we continue to strengthen and improve corporate governance. We will continue to commit to all necessary oversight meetings, audit, risk, and departmental management committees, monitoring on an ongoing basis our strategic risk assessment, ensuring that all performance agreements are signed within the required timeline, and all financial disclosure forms are submitted on time. We have completed the MPAT 1.6 assessment administered by the DPME, and we received an outright score of 4 in the KRA financial management, and we're hoping to ensure that all our scores go to that level across all the different elements of the MPAT into the future. In conclusion, Honourable Chairperson, Deputy Minister, Chair of the Public Service Commission, Honourable Members, colleagues, we are very aware that our constitution requires public administration to be development in its orientation, and that developmental public service requires a professional public service with public servants having the necessary attributes, skills, and competencies. We are, in terms of our mandate, the focal institution for capacity development across the public service. And we remain committed to the mandate, but we're also seeking to reach across the spheres of government and to work with other organs of state to build a capable and developmental state. And then our gains in the previous financial year, which would include the memorandum of understanding we signed with SALGA, lead us to believe that we can expand our role across the entire state system. And meet the requests that we've had from all the spheres of government as well as other organs of state. Thank you very much for this opportunity.
Thank you, Chair. You are in. Are there any questions, clarifications, or comments? Yes, Honourable Wisdom.
One, two.
make sure that the public service is more value added. Chair, I just wanted, I'm sorry if I omitted that. In terms of the MPED results of the 2015 and also in terms of the agency report, you should that carry forward in terms of correction. Can we include those ones? These are more of a I'm just saying, by the way, are they now in terms of the operational issues, which are more administrative than the inward issues, have the capacity to respond to those ones? And number two, probably share one thing that we the Treasury decided to use them, that's $5 million, because $5 million is a very small amount. But also, the big plan now respond to service delivery implementation plan for the department to capacitate the department. Because the service delivery plans are required because the department does not implement their plans per se. As well as an extra to what they are going to be doing. But have you also in terms of the training that you provide or you talk to them this time around? And two things that I'm going to ask you explain an MOU to this that I will further. By chair, we just want to start a question. Probably moving forward, also that we have the benefits that you have. I know that it's important to relate this one. How do we then, how do we ensure that without necessarily trying to enable you with the department, but the department also see you as a prepared training institution as it were, that the response to the skills and equipment that you have to say that, or their appreciation of compliance and really what they consider as a for them. The input on the not fight is that we still around for I'm not sure we spoke about this, but in terms of the financial, that's why I made it that change. The other but the other one, what is the nature of your study for that technical school one? Thanks so much. I know that some of the things because I'm doing to deliver to check interchangeable because we're dealing with the 1780 plan. Delivery because also then thereafter we should be after event we're going to deal with the last quarter of the department. So that's why I'm going to be interchangeable so that my assumption is that as the energy we are forward looking to say how to be ready in our plan, noting our shortcomings before the end of the current financial year.
Okay, thank you. Are there any other questions? If there are no other questions, yes, Honourable.
Thank you, Chair. The presenter referred to self-paced learning. Now, if I'm a slow learner, how much time do I have to complete whatever courses I'm enrolled for? And then, adding to that question, what happens the new skills you've acquired if you do not apply it in the workplace. Then you said something about the latest book and the turnaround time of 60 days. Can you elaborate a little bit about any possible problems you have of getting the money for the courses from the different areas where you must get it from? And lastly, you referred to o'clock in the compulsory induction program. What I would like to know is whether you have since caught up. Are you on track now to, in terms of the time frame? Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Longgroup. Is there anyone? Members, I do have a query, a set of questions. But I want you to keep on memorizing this. I don't know, maybe if you could just ask yourself, do you find the National Treasury Norm standards in terms of the APP a bit constraining? And I'll tell you why. And that's because when we engage with you, there are issues that you raise constantly. But when it comes to the annual performance plan, I don't really get to see those issues. And therefore, to me, then the APP, what's the point of the APP, if it's not necessarily going to see to do? And specifically, I'm talking about the whole issue around the understanding of the energy and what's going to be happening with it. And again, sometimes it frustrates me a bit that as government we tend to, probably because of the numbers that you said, we become more of tick boxes and not necessarily doing what we ought to be doing, but it's more of a compliance issue. And I'm also begging them, by the way, because I was in fact with another someone we were talking about that, because I was saying, we need to find a way of integrating the issues that we pick up on the outside and integrate them with all these other processes, these compliance processes of Parliament. Because I think the challenge with that is there are other issues to me that I would really love to see expressed here. Number one, the issue around the funding of NSG, so we can also be able to track your progress in that area, how far we have gone. We don't want you next year to be coming back and we find that we are talking the same story again, you know? Maybe if we see you next year, see you with a new teacher, we must acknowledge that they have been the other thing that I'm also worried about is that maybe because I don't know if we factor, I know you do mention the issue of morals but under governance and so forth. But to me, really, and I wanted to declare and show that I'm honestly passionate about art and South Africans not to suffer from this exceptionalism. You know, we are in Africa, for goodness sake. And I would love to see in whatever, in our programs that we have, to have something not just international. Because I don't think if we say international, it actually gives a position the issues that we are confronted with prominently in our program. And I feel that we need to find a way of somehow, you know, integrating these issues but also making sure that there is some level of prominence in those issues. Because I do feel that South Africa, and I'm mentioning the issue of Africa and within the risk context, because the reality is that if government fails anywhere else in Africa, we have to shoulder that. In fact, as I said last time, one of the members of COSAT was saying, look at what is happening in Zimbabwe. They literally outsourced their economic challenges to South Africa. Unless we have something in I'm not saying the school must go and solve those problems, but I'm saying maybe there is a role that you can play in also, you know, in doing the training, and specifically even if it means having to fundraise specifically for that specific item around African leadership training. And also to make sure that even South Africans, they actually understand that our growth path as South Africa is heavily reliant on how best our colleagues in Africa perform. And we are dependent on each other basically going forward. And it's got to be our own problem. I wanted you to tease out those as well and share with us what is the point of that. What's your take? Because I'm not sure if we are constrained by the norms, the national treasury norms and standards, that there shall be this in progress one, there shall be this in progress two, you know, and so forth and so forth. And it frustrates me a bit. But the other thing, I mean, we've been saying, we pointed out the problem of a low uptake of the programs of low uptake of programs. But we know that you now have the 5 million. But I'm not seeing anything that is telling me about the target. What are we targeting? What do we hope to achieve with this 5 million specifically? I'm not sure where is that, and I'm not here to tick boxes. Unfortunately, you are very, very unfortunate, Prof. I want you to say something that has a lot more impact. I know that it's not your fault, but I'm saying I need those issues that we are bringing up as major issues, and the issue of positioning NSG as the school of choice, as Honourable Lord Sommer was saying. You now have some resources, even if they are not enough. But let's see what progress are we making towards that. You know, so that was one of the areas that I wanted to say. But the other thing that I also thought is going to be important is probably going forward, Prof, is at the issues around the fact that, especially if you are looking at the, whether you are talking about the CFO of a department or a CFO of a municipality, you know the reality of the situation is that when you go to the university, nobody teaches you the PFMA. Nobody teaches you the Municipal Finance Management Act. And obviously, if we want to be the employer of choice, we want to be focusing on our graduates, university graduate, finance university graduate, and offer something for them who want to come into the public service and say these are the programs that we are offering you, because when they get to our environment, they actually find themselves having to comply with all these streams of things, and you find that we end up wasting a lot of time in South Africa dealing with compliance issues than with issues that are making a difference to communities. We have situations where you would find that an entity or a municipality or whatever, they get an unqualified again for this opinion. But if you go down, you see what sort of impact they are making, you don't get it. And I don't think our ultimate goal is the prosperity of South Africa. And the prosperous South Africa is not just is not for blind. People are not going to measure us by how much we have complied. They are going to measure us by the improvement that we've made in their lives. And it somehow, in as much as yes, compliance are critical, but I'm saying our annual performance plan, somehow they must express this. They must be able to move beyond just compliance, but towards, because compliance is something that should be normal, if you know what I mean. But we are just become the goal. We are now chasing compliance as opposed to that dream of a prosperous South Africa, which to me is an antithesis, and I would really love you to comment on that. But having said that, I really appreciate the amount of work that has gone into this, and I do see that there is progress, and I'm sure that we can position this school well. And I hope that the MOU with SALTA is also going to be around the training of, you know, the CFOs in particular and municipal managers, because if you go and do your MBA, for example, it's not going to tell you about these issues, your Structures Act, it's not going to tell you about the Systems Act, it doesn't care about that. And that should be the niche of the school, because whereas people can be going for all the other qualifications out there, we are only focused on the public service, and that is why it becomes important for us that we orientate the people that are coming into the public service, and they get, you know, they get socialized properly. Thank you. Yes, Honourable Colleagues.
I waited for Laura because I came to ask the six honourable speeches later than me.
You said you'll be here before me. Thanks, Mark.
Yeah, today comes late.
Yeah, very late.
Very late. Not democratic at all.
Well, thank you. I just want to know specifically on the MOUG with SALGA, because I'm not sure if it's in the bottom of my ignorance, so whether it's available on the website. If not, can members of the committee please get a copy of the MOU that was signed? Because I recall that we actually, when it was launched or signed, it was purposely said it's for mayors, councillors and senior managers. That's how the media reported on it, to empower those. But surely, Chair, when we look oversight and when we speak about customer satisfaction, it's not only the senior managers. Bear in mind that we don't have a single public service. But if we go and sign with SALGA, then obviously the person behind the counter that receives the people must be empowered as well. So I would like to know what that relationship is. Thank you.
Okay, you have a lot of questions, but I'm sure you will be able to answer them.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Well, I think I enjoy answering the kind of questions you've asked, because the issue of compliance and developmental public service is something I've actually written quite a lot about as well. I do think that compliance is important, because if we can't master the basics, not only in the NSG but across the entire of government, then we won't be able to achieve all the innovative developmental programs which are in place and which our constitution demands of us and which our NDP demands of us. So we've got very progressive frameworks, but if we don't master the basics, then we will not be in a position to deliver on those. So that would be the high level response. But the thing about National Treasury, let me say that the constraint we face with the National Treasury and the Department of Public Service and Administration is because we're running a trading account, we are also a business. And the kind of program system and organizational structure systems which are imposed on us are not necessarily ideal. So in program one for an organogram, I have to have certain things. But in my honest opinion, I don't need a head of corporate management and a CFO. I need one person who will fulfill those functions, because all I'm doing is building bureaucracy where I can streamline it and focus on my core business. But my colleague will not enable me to do that because his system does not cater for that. So those are some of the challenges which I face within a particular institution now. In other institutions, it's not a problem to separate those. Indeed, it's right. But the way in which my institution operates and the officials which support my colleague, they can't, like, get it And then it is frustrating because I end up spending a whole lot of money on back office, which I could be spending on front office, which is in the delivery system. So let me say that I do understand that question and the constraints which the system imposes on us. However, another challenge is with that 5 million for sales, because sales in any functional business is based on a key account management function. I'm sure you know that, chairperson, given your profile, which obviously we all read about. But in any event, if I'm going to sell things, I must have key account managers who understand the business better than some of people at senior management level. They must understand that in KwaZulu-Natal and in the Eastern Cape, these are the kind of challenges in public service delivery. And these are the programs which we have, which we can deliver in those provinces to build the necessary capacity to improve the delivery. That's what a key account manager must be able to do. They must be able to sell something. They must go to a DG, to an HOD, and say, this is how you've performed. I've read your Auditor General report. I've read your MPAT report. I've read Stats South Africa Community Household Survey. These are the needs. Now, how am I going to get the number of people for 5 million rand that will do that? But you see, a key account management function is funded on the basis of commission, on the basis of successful sale of the program. How am I going to do that within the public service system, that I'm going to employ people who are going to be able to be remunerated on the basis of their performance and delivery as they would be within a normal business situation fulfilling the key account management function. So I have to adapt that money and look at junior officials, and then even I can't do it on a commission basis because then I will fall foul of the job evaluation norms and standards requirements where people on a certain level may get more a salary than the same people on that level fulfilling different functions. And it's very, very tricky to actually do this thing in a meaningful way. So, I mean, I pushed for the key account management function with Treasury, and I am aware of the national fiscal position, but that amount of money may become more of a hindrance than a help, because in compliance I will have to spend it. I will have to put people in place who are unlikely to be able to fulfill the mandate which they will be given to be key account managers who are going to make the cost recovery system work. But I've responded because you asked me a frank question, and I'm being frank in my response. So yes, a lot of the compliance stuff is a hindrance, because I've worked in a number of different departments, even at the DG level. And in other departments, it's a different situation. It's less of a hindrance. But certainly in this particular function I'm fulfilling now, which is a delivery function, a lot of these things are a hindrance. That doesn't mean I don't want to comply, or we don't want to comply as an institution. We are largely compliant. We've put emphasis on that. Our performance at the level of compliance is nothing to be ashamed of. I think we can be proud of some of the areas because we are compliant. But it's not necessarily enabling us to be the kind of institution, Honourable Chairperson, that you are and the ruling party is requiring of us, and government is requiring of us under the current situation. So if I can then refer to your other...
No, you know, one of the things that you picked up, members, and I think maybe this committee might have to begin that debate. One of the key problems we were confronted with during our oversight visit in hospitals, the doctors there are so frustrated, the administration there, they are so frustrated. Because, you know, whereas the BFMA does allow you to deviate, but you have to apply for that deviation. And maybe you need a blood specialist or something like that, you know? And now, and by the time that authorization comes after a month. That specialist is gone. And I think there is something we need to address this, because we are a developmental state, and maybe we do need to revisit this area. And it becomes important as our committee, because we are more interested in the outcome of the services that the administration is delivering. So we are at the impact point as the Public Service and Administration Portfolio Committee. When you go to hospitals, we go there because we want to see whether the patients are getting the, you know, the particular principles are being applied, their professional culture and that kind of thing. But you will actually find that, but when we go there, we find that this legislation, the way we craft, the way we came up with it, it's good. Yes, I agree with you. Compliance is the basic minimum. But we also have to understand that, you know, it can't be a size one fits all. It can't be. Because some departments, I was talking to the Center for the Innovation, the Center for Innovation. It's the same problem that they're going to have. Because how do you talk about, these people are supposed to be championing innovation, and you are then coming to them with norms and standards. Hello, innovation disrupts norms and standards. It's disruptive by its nature, and therefore, they are not going to be able to innovate. What they will be coming up with, they will come up with something that is not as innovative as it would be if they had been given some leeway to be able to really get groundbreaking innovation. So I'm just commenting on that, because I want this to make it to our report, and I'm hoping to that voting that I'm commenting now, because I want it to make it to our report if the members agree with me when we take with the patients in their house. Because it's very important. We are not saying we are doing away with compliance, but we are saying there are specific areas where we have to give exemptions in certain areas. We are not saying no, this can't be FFA. We'll be crazy to say that. It's very important. But we need to come up with something that is consistent with the level of development of this country and with the outcomes that we seek. Thank you. You may proceed.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson. Perhaps we didn't emphasize enough, and we can do it in our future presentations. We have quite a strong program on the continent, and historically it has included support for post-conflict countries. We've run programs in South Sudan, we've run programs in the DRC, we've run programs in Rwanda and Burundi. We also are part of the African Management Development Institute network. We are currently performing the treasury function, and it is a structure which has recognition within the AU system. It's part of the Specialized Technical Committee, together with the Minister of Public Service and Administration, in the Political Affairs Specialized Technical Committee. So in a sense, the AMDEN network is seen as the training arm. The significance of the partnership that we are currently concluding with NEPAD is that we will now, as the NSG, provide programs which some of our institutions across the continent inside the African Management Development Institute network, they will be able to access that program on African governance, for example. And the partnership with the French school will enable us to develop from the outset a program that is both serving Anglophone and Francophone. We know obviously that there's Lusophone and Arabic, but we will get a different kind of approach this time, because we sort of restricted with the Anglophone, but the partnership with the French, which has a lot of credibility amongst the Francophone countries, that particular institution, it will help us to make a much bigger impact on the continent. And the African governance program will be a first. So I think that it will take time to get it there, but we are confident that it will be highly innovative and be a path breaker. The issue of program relevance, I do, certainly when I came, and obviously we work in the system, we have perceptions around the NSG. What I found quite strong is the content, the basic content of the generic programs is very strong. All the financial management, supply chain management programs that we offer have been developed in partnership with Treasury, and we've also worked with the DPSA on most of our human resource management programs. So the issue of relevance in terms of these issues of basic compliance, reports of AGs, and so on, we find that we do have offerings which allow people with the foundational knowledge which they have through their universities, degrees and diplomas, they get that extra bit of application in the workplace, where we're teaching about the PFMA, the Public Service Act, the Public Service Regulations, the basics of monitoring and evaluation, which increasingly are required across the public service in order to be able to report on the MTSF. We definitely have the generic building blocks for applied learning across the public service, and increasingly we're moving into innovative areas and the use of technology. So the question which relates to self-paced learning is it means it's self-paced. For example, the Managing Performance course, which is a pure online program with self-certification, with all the necessary checks and balances, which means that people can't crook the system. They have to go through all the tests and exercises before they can self-certify. But if one person takes 4 weeks or 6 weeks and another person takes 2 weeks and others take 3 weeks, it doesn't matter, but people who are focused, who work 1 hour a day, can do it between 2 and 3 weeks. But if it takes them 6 weeks and they complete it, that's not a problem. They've completed, they've done all the exercise, they've done all the applications of the relevant prescripts and the exercise which help them to apply the prescripts. So we are quite innovative in our course content and material, and we are currently building an MOU, which was another question, because we have to operate with MOUs the way we operate as a cost recovery entity. We don't have money. We can't go to TIPS, which is an agency dealing with international trade and industrialization policy, which has developed a number of training programs for application across different kinds of public sector spaces, including local government. We need an MOU to be enabled to enable us to work with them. And on the SALGA thing, the MOU is generic in terms of any programs. In fact, we've been looking at the different kinds of work we can do at local government. So we've also interacted with the LG CETA. And in fact, some of the ideas around the economic development courses come from our interactions with the LG CETA. So any course required at local government, we have partnerships with Buffalo City, we've got partnerships with the City of Cape Town, where we are delivering programs at different levels for different requirements, but a lot of the requests are coming for people at the management echelon. We agree, though, that obviously in the front line of service delivery. So this one of excellent customer or citizen care, which we offer offering to frontline delivery staff, which can come as an online program or a blended program, we are trying to occupy all those relevant spaces with relevant courses. I'm not here to simply moan about money, because you know, we've come up with ideas on how we can solve in the current kind of configuration. If we are going to expand over time, then we can come with formulae for greater amounts of money drawing from the skills levy within the public sector. Perhaps maybe then, just to cover up some of the other questions, and I will ask my colleagues, I have the CFO, Ms. Pindile Mkwanazi, with me, as well as the acting DDG Corporate Management, Mr. Dino Punsami. They can maybe cover up when I'm finished on some of the issues around the MPAT results and the AG report, to talk about some of the gaps and what we're doing about those that were identified. But there were a few other questions. I've dealt with the issue of the MOU. Our training needs analysis. Again, that's an area we need to expand on, and it's something that maybe with the EU funding we can look at expanding on it, because we do a very, very thorough investigation to identify those needs. We don't just go to workplace skills plans. We obviously look at those. But we go through a more engaged and detailed process. And the EU funding is going to create space for us to establish an assessment center. An assessment center is really to identify training needs across the entire system, even if we are not going to be the providers. In the professions, for example, if we're going to do proper needs assessments, we must understand that applied courses for engineers, which are applied in water affairs, in public works, or wherever they have engineers, are not the best or optimal programs, or they are the optimal programs. We should be in a position to evaluate and assess those kinds of things as well. So we do a training needs analysis. We need to upscale. And within the cost recovery, currently we do it for free. We'll go to a department or a province, we'll do a whole lot of work, we do it for free. But if we are intended to be a cost recovery entity, we should be charging for those services of identifying the training needs. So these are all the things that we will need to answer as we modify the funding model going forward. I think the specifics around the debtors book, the CFO can deal with, but there is a challenge. We know it. I mean, we hear reports from different spheres of government, of departments that haven't paid their electricity bills or whatever, how much more a training bill? And that's how we build up debt, is departments, they secure our services, but they don't pay us. Not across the board, of course, but we do have a significant debtors book. We've managed to narrow it, and following comments from this portfolio committee in specific, we introduced a prepayment system which lessens the risk of debt. It creates other problems, though, because we get a prepayment and then departments don't convene the course. And in cases we distribute all the materials to those departments, but then they don't actually convene the course and utilize those materials. And that is a drain on our own resource base, because if we are a cost recovery entity, we can't be distributing materials and not being paid for them. So we have now introduced, with the support of the Office of the AG and our Internal Audit Committee, a revision of our revenue recognition, at which point we recognize certain kinds of revenue, even if the training is not complete. So I think that's the backlog we haven't covered up fully, because as we have reported to the committee on the induction program, following the signing of the MOU with SALGA, we put a lot of energy and effort to making sure that all the counselors in support of SALGA were trained. So we trained trainers and we worked with those trainers to roll out the training to all the relevant counselors. But there is a whole career path, which SALGA, by the way, in the answer to the MOU, SALGA has developed a whole sort of career and training path for people in local government, and that's where we will plug in at all the different levels for different levels of staff as well as for councillors, and to ensure that they get training which is accredited as well, which is very important specifically for especially for the councillors. So on the EU funding, the EU funding requirements, that is where compliance is taken to the absolute extreme, Honourable Chairperson, and the kind of requirements on our side to release the funding are extremely onerous, but we do need it. We don't have an additional source. It is coming on stream now. We are finalizing a lot of our terms of reference, which will lead to the release of the funding. We have hired some of the people that they require to do the program management and keeping the accounting system going for the funding. But really, the turnaround of the NSG is linked to culture on the one hand, but also a change in attitude. When I met with the DGs, I explained, when we go out, I don't go to DGs, even if I'm involved or if my senior managers are involved. They go to people who are managing a human resource development component within a department. That's where we have to do the hard negotiation for the rollout of our programs. And those people maybe don't have the big picture. They maybe don't see the value in what they're doing. They may get demands from managers that they can't override. That's where the actual negotiation takes place. And that's part of the problem of making this cost recovery model work, because we have to convince someone at a lower level of the institution to get the approval on our program. And we know that there are private sector offerings, which may be workshops in hotels like this, for 12,000 Rand, for 15,000 Rand. Our short learning program of 3 days may be 5,000 Rand or 6,000 Rand, depending on the program. And they would rather go to those hotels where private sector institutions get public service speakers and sometimes even ministers to come and make a speech in a place like Sandton, wherever, and that they regard as training. Now, for me, that's not training. I'm not saying those learning experiences are complete waste of time or whatever, but that is how training budgets are spent. Those are the realities we're dealing with, and we need to recognize them if we're going to get this institution to the level that we need to get it to. That is what the competition with the private sector is. That's what it amounts to. And at the end of the day, to get the release on our courses, we are often dealing with relatively junior officials in negotiating with departments. So we may have an MOU which a DG has signed with myself, but to get it moving, we are negotiating much lower down in the system, often not even with the head of corporate services. Sometimes, obviously, because we are running courses, we're training a lot of people, we're getting the right linkages to get the work done, but there needs to be a change in the culture of capacity development across the entire system. We obviously want to work at the highest level with accounting officers, with DGs, with heads of corporate services to make sure that the relevant training is in place in order to meet the needs of public servants, and not simply events that are being attended and being ticked off, like you say, ticking the box we spent on training. What is inside of all of that? A lot of it is going to those kind of courses. With due respect to the National Treasury, we work with them, as I've indicated. Every program we're offering is done in collaboration with them, but they have their own training unit, and they are busy rolling out things without money. They, even in our reports that we give to the GNA, they're waiting for DFID and other institutions to fund their training unit. And we also get, we pick up what people say out there in the public service, that the NSG is not doing much, or it's a useless organization or whatever. And Treasury is trying to run it, but all they're doing is outsourcing it anyway. So it makes no sense. There's too much things that don't make sense in this training space. And this is what one has with a highly decentralized public service. It offers opportunities, but it also leads to a lot of gaps and wastages, because there's no central real determination. That's why we've spoken with the minister and deputy minister, and we've tabled it here, that we're looking at a broad determination on compulsory training. And we can draw it in a flexible way, which will allow us to review the annexure, which is a list of training courses on an annual or biannual basis, and then we get the training done. But I think we hopefully have dealt with most of the issues. The improvement of our performance is linked with the EU, because at the moment, part of the culture is we deal with departments. Why can't we deal with public servants, especially as we move into the area of compulsory training? Why can't we simply send an SMS to every new public servant as they arrive, which says, welcome to the public service from the National School of Government. Your compulsory induction program is being offered during these days. We look forward to seeing you there. We can't do that right now. We need to go and negotiate with the department, even if they've paid us in advance. We are still negotiating at this level with the department, and you've got individual public servants who must go through learning processes. So we believe we need to engage with departments, but we also need to be empowered in the compulsory training field to engage directly with the public servants and to recruit them in and to track them and their progress. So we do not only need to have a back office system which is dealing with what we're doing with departments, we need a student management system. which allows us to deliver training more effectively. And that's what the EU will help us with. In terms of the improved performance, we did it through what I may call micromanagement, through the establishment of a war room, where we come together on a weekly basis, look at the plans for the week, and track and continue to understand the numbers of people training as accurately as possible within our current systemic constraints in real time. And that's how we were actually able to get to the point we did last year. But it's not really the ideal way of operating in the long term, because we want to be out there focusing on doing the work. But with a cost recovery model, it probably would have to have something like a war room operation on an ongoing basis. In fact, we benchmarked. We went to some of these private institutions like Regenesis. They operate something like that. That's where we got the idea from. Every single day, they start in the war room. We don't do it every day. We do it once a week. But that's really how they manage to keep their business going as a going concern. So I think we've covered most of it, but I will ask Ms. Mkhwanazi and Mr. Poonsami to make some comments around the MPAT and the AG briefly to say where some of the gaps were and the way in which we make sure that we don't repeat those kind of issues. Thank you.
Chair, I think the issues which are raised by Prof here, they need all of us to remember, because the success of the school is very critical to the state or to the government. But perhaps we need to go back to the question and say, why was the school established in the first place? And the constitution is very clear that the school was established in order to equip public servants with skills and competency. But now, if the school is struggling in the manner in which it is, perhaps we need to go to the drawing board to say, what do we do? What needs to be done? Because the orientation programs which they are offering to the newly employed public servants, to me, when I received the presentation, I felt strongly that it is not good enough, precisely because it does not address the fundamental problem which confronts the public service. So we need to really go deep and think, what else can we do? I was dreaming maybe of what say, perhaps we need to say, before anybody is employed in the public service, must go through the school itself. Because if you allow them to get inside the system, and from there you say, come for orientation programs, let's say you are speaking to someone who's holding a doctorate. To him or to her, it's not really important to attend that. So it won't make an impact. So if we come up with a legislation that says anybody who wants to be employed in the public service must buy the school, then I think it will help us to address two issues. Number one, to inculcate this culture of work ethics and whatever they are trying to do when they do the orientation program. Point number two, it also assists the school to make sure the department complies with what the constitution says, because if each and every department does their own training, and yes, we have the school, it is in the whole purpose. People will still go outside to the private institutions to have the skills and so on. So I think, as honorable members, we really need to look into the issue of legislation how to assist the school. Thank you.
Thank you very much, JM. Therefore, did you want to say something?
Thank you, Chair. On the question on the the 60-day target that we've put for ourselves, the plans that we have in place to try and monitor that is that we put in place the prepayment system. So, but we have to enter into MOAs or MOUs with the department to agree that they will pay us the on prepayment basis. Some we have to yield and allow them to pay after the training has happened. So that's why we try and monitor the MOAs to make sure that they comply with the rules of 30 days when that happens. We also have National Trade that are assisting us with the old debt. With their intervention in the previous financial year, we were able to collect quite a lot of amount that was old and outstanding, but we still do have some challenges. But they were, as an example, Limpopo is coordinating the whole debt that we had with them at the Premier's office. So they make sure that they coordinate all their staples to attend the meetings and monitor them if they're paying and resolving all the queries. So we're busy with all other departments as well, talking to them and trying to coordinate those things to be resolved as quick as possible with the help of National Treasury. Thank you.
Okay, Anna, would you come?
Yes, thank you. No, I was just asking whether they have for everything or just for me to be loud. But having said that, Chair, when we are looking at the annual performance plan for the incoming year, when we raise issues, we don't understand the questions concerned because most of the issues that we reached are the issues that we raised. We did not point also. So what we expect from the survey was that those issues which are policy and improving performance of the department or entity, to find the discussion the plan. For me then, I'm not too sure how the chair will advise us. How to ensure that the issue, because the issue of what Professor Grady pointed out, the issue white Indians and the stereotype structure organism of government. So somewhere in this a blend, there must be something to talk to that. But it's not, it's basically the complaint. We are spending the complaint also, who should come to the
Because the introduction of your KFA,
compliance or social regulation and all those things. If it's just generally as it were, not targeting the department in terms of their areas and all that, in terms of their levels of officials, so to speak. If you see your CFO, DGs, your municipal managers, so forth and so forth. So it must be an understandable situation. But at the fundamental point of reason, how is it going to find it, especially here from this week, in terms of our program, which we are able to change the program, we must then approve the budget support. Yeah. The other one of this is when they come in, because the issue that is a problem raised in terms of having two workbooks in terms of their designation, whereas you need one, which means we're so busy in terms of our program and then come in, which we need to look at the game.
Okay, is there any other member that wants to? Member, you know, I want to propose something here so that we can have progress with this matter. I was going to propose that the CPSI and the National School, if you could come together and formulate a paper about how to, you know, make these entities efficient and point out these areas that are constraining you, so that when we are this position paper, unfortunately, will have to be tabled to us before we go, you know, when we table the report in the house, we have to say that that's what we've directed you to do, because this is a problem, and obviously we don't want you to be frustrated. We can't be expecting you to be, you know, promoting an efficient, effective public service when you yourself are very frustrated, because these are not your own making, but it's the design, our legislative design, not some aspects of it, not all of it, but some aspects of it are not really good enough for this. And I think we need to do that. We shall be doing that. That will fit into the other one that we spoke about as members when we deal with our oversight report. Because we picked up that most hospitals, they have a problem, a serious problem, with a certain aspect of the PFMA. You know, the one that the deviation, because that deviation does not work for them. And in fact, it is, you know, we found some hospitals have occupancy rate of about 60%. And we are going to be complaining about the quality of the service when we have a disenabling environment, legislative environment. You know, and I'm saying these issues, if we could start with you, because you are entities, I think it's going to be a lot better, so that we can make a case. So that next year when we come back, we are looking at the progress that we have made from the challenges that you are confronted with, because it's no use talking about these problems and not solving them. We've got to be, to look into those issues. The other thing that I also thought from is going to be very important. You know your Rutanang Ma Africa campaign. It's a brilliant campaign. However, I actually want us to link it with building a... It's got to be a part of building a very ethical and moral public service. How do you do that? Those who are no longer in the public service, where, in other words, those who are not only in the public service, who had a very good record, who are really driven, who are doing this thing, you should find a way of making sure that when you get that recognized by the school, that you are one of the people that you would like to. You can create your criteria or whatever, but something that is linked to that. So that if you are a public servant, you know that if you retire in future, you will also have an opportunity to go to the school and plow back at the school because of the way you were conducting yourself. It's a futuristic thing, but I'm not saying that's not start using the current ones. But I'm talking about those that have already invested in public service. It's going to be very important to do that. And I see a lot of synergy between you and the CKF SI. And the final thing that I wanted to do, that I wanted us to probably look at from, shouldn't we be asking, because the case you are able to be is a very compelling case around these 5 minutes. It's a very compelling case in the sense that you are saying, in my head, I've just even crafted something in my head that says, you know, a school that is an activist school, but if you like, you understand, where you are not going to be, you know that there is a particular problem in a particular department or particular municipality or whatever. Instead of you waiting for those people to come to you, you go to them and say, this is what is happening here, and we think we can work together with you to resolve this thing. And this thing, by the way, speaks to what CPSI could be doing as well. I'm just thinking about that specifically, the thing that you were talking about, because to me, it makes the case you are making is very compelling about the constraints you have, even in terms of spending this 5 million. You have to operate within this very narrow scope, which is really not going to be giving you the results that you seek. And if we are serious about this thing, I am saying we need to actually, even if we have a lead committee, we have to be resolving that we are supporting the school to apply for the deviation from National Treasury. Because we need to start from somewhere. You know, I think we need to do that. Otherwise, what's the point of this oversight? What is our impact as the oversight function? We are picking up these issues. When we pick them up, we need to be able to solve them. It's not enough to know that this is the problem. Oversight is not about punching holes on departments. It's also creating an enabling environment, and it's a part of the checks and balances. It's part of actually ensuring that you promote good governance as well. And good governance can't happen if our systems are not compatible with good governance. You know? We want you to deliver the best results, but you are constrained, and we need to deal with that. And if we can play our role as well from this side, let's do so. There is a point that was raised by Honorable Vandenberg, and which I don't think the school I know that you have maybe capacity issues about the frontline staff. The frontline staff are actually very, very important. From the customer experience, yes, you need the executives there, but they are more of your back office, if you like. Your frontline staff are really about what we are about. The kind of things that we find. I mean, we went into that hospital, Manchwana, to find people that have been there for 2 days. They don't even have a file. These issues, they may seem soft, but they are the ones that we are judged by as government, whether we are delivering or we are not delivering. And therefore, maybe you will need to find, even if it means, maybe not this year, but maybe you need to recommend something to National Treasury to say you would like to come up with a different reporting format that is not even the thing of putting your own APPs or something like that. That is going to be consistent with what you are about. Because if we are going to put you in this box, obviously you're not going to perform as much as you would if you were actually pulled out of the box, you know? And I think that's the value add that we can do. And the frontline staff would like to see something to that effect, you know, that speaks to that. Obviously, maybe not this current financial year, because your budget is already already there and so forth, and you don't know what's going to happen. But going forward, these are the things that you need to be thinking about. Where you tell us, maybe even in terms of your APP, it's not enough to just give us a program that says training. We need to know what are the different interventions that different layers of the organization. Because to us, the frontline staff, and that has been our experience when we went to all our hospitals, that was our feeling when we went to all these places, that the people are not happy, especially when it comes to how frontline staff is doing their work. I mean, we had a situation there in that hospital where a dental chair has been broken for how long? I mean, a dental chair has been broken for, I don't know how many, for a long time. And people are not treated because the dental chair is broken. It's scary things that we come across. Even with the OPD there, we are told why the patients waiting there, it's because the filing cabinet has fallen. For months, the filing cabinet has fallen. Nobody thinks about picking this filing cabinet up and sorting out the file. Now, patients must be waiting for two days to get their file. In fact, even that 2 days, we're not even sure if they're going to get any help. You know? So I'm saying we have those kinds of things. And if there is a way we can do these things, then let's help you. But thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I think
you should become an MP. I think thank you, honorable. I think you should. And then I go to school. That's why.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think the issues that have been raised are helpful to us. We do have discussions with the DPSA, including around the structure. the DG as an individual is helpful, but we obviously then need to work through the detail with staff below, and that's where we run into the kinds of problems that I was explaining in terms of the norms and standards of how you set an organizational structure for a government department. But I think, as you've indicated, the main space you've opened up for us is to write a report. We will collaborate with the CPSI and make sure that the report is one report, obviously with two sections, one on each institution. But we will have an engagement with them, because I think, you know, when we meet heads, we would probably find better ways, both of us, are of constructing such a report. So we will certainly do that to take it forward. Again, when we look at compulsory programs, the one we've developed for frontline staff, it may be that when we work with the DPSA, we deem that one to be one of the compulsory ones. We've done one on ethics, by the way, which the DPSA is very excited about. And the uptake, for example, the Financial Services Board, every staff member, it's an online program. But then they asked us to blend it, so it's consolidated in a workshop at the end. But the entire Financial Services Board, from the entry level to the head of the institute, they like the course and they want to do one. So we're doing an MOU with them, and we are going to implement that course in the current financial year, the one on ethics and good governance. So certainly for frontline staff, we have something in place. We just need to work with other colleagues across the system and see whether this is something we can get the minister to determine as a compulsory program, and then all frontline staff can would be then required to do it. So I think it's been very helpful, us, the engagement we've had. We really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much. Members, shall we move on to the next? We are proposed to go for a tea break. There is no tea outside. No, but we should go to the Public Service Commission on their annual performance framework. So, are you ready? I know you are ready. If you are not ready, then you are going to complain like the advocate. Say, that means I failed to continue to chair. That you also need mine.
Let me get my stuff.
In here, you must copy it from here.
I don't have a laptop. Okay, so I can pick from her.
Oh, okay, let's just call him up here. I was thinking for you. Who is that? Oh, God.